love everything he says. I love the tone of his voice. I could listen to him for hours.
BB, right. I've had many conversations with him. So that means I've heard him speak publicly. When you sit with him, it's a completely different person. It's like an actor. You know, you can watch George Clooney or any of the great actors, and when they're on stage, they're one person, and when you're having a personal conversation, they're very, very different. And in a way, it was spiritually very, in a way, it's illuminating. You know, what are the I'll call it a struggle. Maybe it's not the word I'd like. I didn't struggle. My faith wasn't struggling. But one of the things I really didn't get is how were great men who had such enormous potential, how did they fall? How did the 10 out of 12 spies doubt the God? It just didn't resonate. Like, how could kings just turn away from God? How could they have made such deplorable decisions when they had the prophets around them, when everything was so clear? And I really kind of just had to chalk it up to something I just don't know. It's not a... It's certainly, you know, it just didn't, there was nothing that I could observe. Like, I look at Churchill, who is what I think is one of the greatest men of the 20th century. He said something, and he spoke beautifully, and then he actually did it. He implemented it. This was a righteous Gentile. So I had a lot of trouble understanding how could kings of Israel have been, and leaders in the CIA, which are princes, how could they have failed? How could they have fallen? How could they have, their knees have buckled? I understand the words I'm reading, but it just did not in any way comport with anything until BB.
With the action.
Yeah, that means, is it really possible that people could? And the answer is yes. And this is BB. This is BB's always mistake. He was a great disappointment to his father, who was a very great man. Very great man. And his father died at a ripe old age. He was a great historian. But this is BB. And people don't get it. And I understand, because it doesn't match. And I get that, but you got to know the man. But when you talk to him privately, he's a different person. I get it. You know, all these people say he's so good looking. Women are crazy about him. He's beautiful in front of the camera. He's articulate. He's sober.
It's true. He is articulate. He's absolutely articulate. Like I said, I could listen to him for hours. But in his defense, one has to say, as the prime minister of Israel, surely if there's a job that you don't want, it's that one. And he's been carrying that job, at least he's been carrying that job. And he does make the speeches, he says all the right things, but the problem is that when it comes to the action, he stops short. Did you come to a conclusion as to why?
No, there's something wrong with the man. There's really something wrong with him. And this and I know what people are thinking, and this has happened with Gush Katif. People think, well, he probably has access to information that we don't have. He knows things that we don't know. He's got a plan, and we don't have access to all that information. So surely there's something coming and he's got something on his sleeve. The answer is he doesn't. It's the same thing with Ariel Sharon when they expelled the Jews from Gaza. They're launching rockets now from what was once Jewish communities. They said, Sharon is such a great man. He did accomplish so much. Surely he knows something that, well, it turned out he doesn't. It was one of the greatest blunders, and we're paying the price. The same thing with Cass Led. They said, finish the job. You see, and what they do is, you know, we talked about this whole concept of the Iron Dome. Certainly nice to have, it's important to have an Iron Dome, but this is part of their policy to have an Iron Dome rather than destroy the terrorists. If you look at the news now, Tzipi Livni, who's a leftist, who came up with another stupidity, and that is, again, it's of course it could be helpful, and that is to build a wall, a subterranean wall that's virtually impregnable and also wired to know if anyone tries to penetrate it, and to sink a wall, let's say that's 100 feet deep, into the ground. So instead of having just a wall above the ground, now they'll have a 100-foot wall beneath the ground, which will make it nearly impossible for Hamas to penetrate and theoretically did, Israel will be able to identify precisely. Again, they're trying to figure out all these ways to do some, to not do one thing, and to actually is to take out Hamas, to actually liberate Jewish communities in that place. Because this is a little sarcastic, but to my knowledge, there were 21 Jewish communities in the Gaza Strip until 2005, and not a single rocket was ever fired from a Jewish community into other parts of the land of Israel. So, I mean, I'm saying that sarcastically. They know it's a blunder. They've refused to do the right thing. They refused to take out the terrorists. Therefore, we'll build walls above the ground, below the ground, we're shooting rockets.
So what are you telling me? I mean, like so much of the medical profession these days, the diseases are being treated rather than prevented. And what you're telling me is that the powers that be in Israel at the moment want to do the same thing. They want to treat the problem with the Iron Dome, with the walls, with the subterranean walls, rather than prevent the problem by finishing the job.
You know, in Australia, they have some of the finest the finest medical treatments in the world, some hospitals that specialize in oncology, for example, Nishtagadach, God forbid that anyone should have to be there. They have the same thing in New York, you know, and surgeons go in when they detect a lump, when they detect, they go in, and what do? They don't feed the cancer. They don't try to create a barrier around the cancer. They cut it out. Mm-hmm. And they cut it out when a woman, God forbid, has breast cancer, they go in and they take out as much tissue as possible, hoping to take every cut out. The only way to get rid of this cancer, you saw the film with the lead spokesman of Hamas said the Jews kill Christian boys for the matzahs. You saw I posted it up there. This is what we're up against. This is what we're up against. We're up against absolute evil. And the world, what is resonating very much now is the world really is divided, and it's good and evil. This is the moral issue of the century. You're either with Israel or against Israel, meaning you're with the God of Israel or against.
Can I just take you back to, in regards to the peace process, or at least the pending ceasefire that seems to be in place, Jeremiah 6:14, it says, they have treated my people's brokenness superficially, claiming peace, peace, when there is no peace.
Right.
Neil, I mean, is that applicable here?
Yes, of course.
I mean, basically, have they said let's we've done enough damage to stop the rockets for a year? Let's pull out now with some caution, and in a year or so we'll deal with it again then.
Yeah, this is echoed at the end of days, the Jews in Israel will feel that a certain sense of false security, because it will describes in Ezekiel 38 and 39 that the cities will not have walls. That means that they feel a certain sense of comfort, that they don't need a wall to protect them, that they could, they could work out some sort of peace process, and somehow that will... But in fact, Jeremiah in chapter 6, of course, the entire theme of that chapter is to convey the fact that there is an imminent horror of the invasion. And Jeremiah is going to proceed to plead with them to repent. The nation is not going to repent. Jeremiah is going to even makes the case in 25. If you just wait, Babylon will be done with in 70 years. Just patience. And of course, if you just wait, because the first temple did not have to be destroyed. But that's why these texts are Tanakh, because they apply to all our generations, to those who seek to appease the nations or seek out. The good thing is what you read in the New York Times today, yesterday, and that is that there's a fantastic breakdown that's now in effect between the American and Israeli administration, where they're basically hanging up on each other. Bibi and Kerry, literally, they had some sort of disconnection, and they literally hung up on each other. This is very, very good. And because the America is the most toxic force now with regards to Israel, pushing it to a ceasefire. And the stupidities are saying, well, if we can resolve and get a ceasefire with Hamas, now we can move ahead with the peace process with the Palestinians. You idiots. This just demonstrates exactly what will happen to any piece of land that you give over to them. We're not dealing with Canada. We're not dealing with countries like New Zealand. These are not benign people who just want to live in peace. They want to live in war. So,
this pending ceasefire, what you're saying is that this is a Band-Aid. This is a Band-Aid on a gaping wound.
They did one smart thing, and that is Israel has not agreed to any official ceasefire. So the tanks have been pulled out. Most of their resources have now been removed right outside of the Gaza. But Israel, because that soldier was first kidnapped, now we know he's dead, took place an hour and a half after the ceasefire was called for. So Israel's going, why do we need to negotiate? We're not going to negotiate anything. There is no ceasefire. There's just calm for calm. But there's no ceasefire because a ceasefire would entail an agreement, and the agreement will always be that Israel has to lift the siege on Gaza. Well, no better case could be made why the siege cannot be lifted, because look at what they're doing. They're shooting rockets, they're shooting missiles at Tel Aviv. Well, where did they get them? They went to Walmart, they went to ShopRite. Where do they go shopping for these things? They didn't. So, I mean, the rockets are, the primitive rockets are homemade, but these missiles that are being launched, they're all imported. So now Israel cannot be shipping cement, because as it turns out, they want the buildings to be destroyed. Hamas wants it to be Israel to have bombed these houses, to be able to demand more imports of cement so they could use that cement, because it's dual purpose, in order to build tunnels again. So Israel has not agreed to any long-term ceasefire. It's in just in a holding pattern. That's basically it.
So what do you think? I mean, if you had to put a dollar on it, do you think that it's going to hold?
No, it's going to extend
72 hours? You don't think so?
No. Of course, they're going to be shooting. They're going to be shooting rocks. But what Hamas is trying to do is now to figure out a way to step out of this with their pride intact. That's what's key for them, to show that there's some element of victory.
They don't have a back door, though. What could it possibly be?
If they get a ceasefire, that's why Hamas sent finally down the representatives to Cairo, because they're trying to now get a ceasefire. But as part of that ceasefire is an agreement from it, some sort of concession from Israel, that Israel is going to lift, ease the blockade, the restrictions, and so on. And then they can point to that and say, you see, we've achieved the victory. Israel is depriving them of that and saying, there's a humanitarian temporary ceasefire, but we're not engaging in a long-term ceasefire.
Okay, so Bibi will continue to deny them that. And as I've heard for the last couple of days on the news, Hamas, this is the same ceasefire agreement that Egypt brokered a couple of weeks ago. You could have saved all this destruction and death if only you had accepted it then, what you are potentially accepting now.
But, you know, we're dealing with Yishmael, you know. I tell you about the passage in Genesis 16, the Pera Adam. I've described that, explained that, went through that passage with you. If I didn't, just tell me. The Bible calls Yishmael's descendants as a Pera Adam, which means basically a wild beast of a man. Adam means a man, para, which means wild, okay? Very simple passage, Genesis 16. Now, there's something very wrong or very odd about the grammar here. In Hebrew, the adjective follows the noun. In English, we say it's a blue ball, so the adjective precedes the noun. But in Hebrew, if we want to say a red ball, we say kadur edom, a ball that's red. The adjective, this is very deep what I'm about to tell you. The adjective, the description, follows the noun. The adjective follows the noun. So it should not say para odom, which is translated always as a wild man, wild ass of me, whatever one you translate. Mm-hmm. It should be Odom Pera, a man mm-hmm. that is wild, not wild. Yep. Herodom. What do our sages tell us is unbelievable. See, you have to prepare yourself for what you're about to see here. Our sages tell us that, in fact, this is that what the Torah is conveying here in very unambiguous terms is the following. The noun really is para, and odom is the adjective. Listen to what this means. That means that the essence of what these descendants are going to be is they are wild, but they come in the form of an odom, of a person. Their essence is wildness. And now we see before our eyes, they've discovered the manual from Hamas already where they said,
yes.
Yeah, but this is what the Gemara says, and it's right there in the text. Para Odom means they are a wildness. They are wild. That is the noun.
Mm-hmm.
Odom is the adjective.
Is the description. Feral, like it's a people that are feral in the form of men, is what you're saying.
Right. And that's what it means, literally. Para Odom means they are wild. That's who they are. That's the noun. And they are in the shape. They will appear to you as Odom, as people. Five fingers on each hand. But Odom mm-hmm. is the adjective. And we see it before. You know, the Germans didn't do this, my God.
And there's no negotiating with
this. No, of course not. Of course. Look, the guy, you saw the film. The guy gets up and says the Jews use blood for matzahs. Who talks that way? No, I mean, that's like, I mean, thank God in a way he did us a favor because people watch you say these people really are, but this is what we're dealing with. Did the Germans use human shields? Never. Moreover, I mean, this is not hyperbole. The Germans did not celebrate killing Jews ever. There's no record of this ever. In fact, the Germans didn't really like it, and they got the Slavics, like the Ukrainians, to carry out the Einsatzgruppen. Those are the ones who went around just shooting, you know, killing Jews and mm-hmm. throwing into pit because they couldn't stand it. It was just unappealing. I mean, for the Germans, I mean, let's just set aside the evil from them. Let's just isolate this one point. For the Germans, there was no joy in killing Jews. It was simply the Third Reich had to be Judenrein. So therefore, the final solution is we have to kill the Jews. This is what's necessary for the German people. This is what's necessary for the Aryan race is to remove, to murder, to exterminate, whatever you want to call it, those who are untermenschen, those who are subhuman. But it wasn't a glory. It didn't make them happy. But these guys actually on 9/11 are giving out candy and laughing and happy mm-hmm. when they hear children are killed. The Germans never did that. And this is not, I know, unfortunately, Holocaust analogy is overused. But the Germans did not do this. The Germans did not celebrate killing Jews. They felt it had to be done in order to, you know, to have a mm-hmm. a master race. In fact, Hitler was ready to ship the Jews to Palestine to get them out of Europe. And it was Haji Amin al-Husseini, and we have the famous picture in 1941 meeting with Hitler mm-hmm. saying, Hitler, don't do it. You know, don't, you know, he said, don't let the Jews come. On the contrary, he said, bring in the thing and get rid of the Jews here too. Thank God Rommel failed in North Africa, and if he hadn't, Israel would have been, you know, the Jews was safe, as it turns out. It's counterintuitive. Israel is the safest place to be, but Hitler contemplated seriously exporting the Jews and sending them to Palestine, just get them out of this land that had to be set aside for an Aryan nation. He was convinced not to do that by the Arabs, but the Jews and, you know, and so on. So, I mean, the 1939 White Paper sealed the fate of the Jews. If Jews were allowed to emigrate to Palestine in 1939, millions would have been saved. They had nowhere to go. They had nowhere to... That was your problem. If you were in Europe... After 1924 and 1929, you could not get out. I mean, you basically your fate was sealed. There was nowhere to go, because America was no longer allowing it. Immigrants, it wasn't just Jews, they just stopped immigration. Mm-hmm. It wasn't advantageous given the industrial age and where it wasn't an economic benefit. So that was the problem. But if Jews could have fled to Israel, millions would have been saved, and Hitler would have gone with it. So these guys, I mean, just an attitude, they're really enjoying killing Jews. This is really, thank God the Arabs are not Canadians, meaning they're wild. They do things in a wild way, and this saves us because of their stupidity.
And isn't that true?
Yeah, they always save us from ourselves. Always. Mm. I mean, all they
have. Their own worst enemy, that's true.
They are. They're always the ones who force Israel's hand to do what it should have done without it. But this is what we're up against. So, yeah.
That's right.